Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Bucks beat the Green Bay Packers 38-10. What a defensive effort by this ball club. Of course, they harassed Aaron Rodgers into throwing two interceptions. They sacked him four times and hit him on 11 other occasions. We'll break down the Bucks and the Green Bay Packers here in just a second. And also, of course, the Tampa Bay Rays headed to the World Series for the second time in franchise history as they knock off the Houston Astros 4-3. We'll certainly discuss all of that and more with my buddy cop, my good friend Eduardo Encina on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Hey, folks, in addition to Old Northeast Jewelers, you know they're on 4th Street in St. Petersburg. Been there for years. Well, now they have a brand new store in Hyde Park. It's the grand opening, of course, this past month. Now, the address is 1607 West Swan Avenue, Hyde Park Village in Tampa. It's beautiful down there. Go check out the Grand Seiko. It's described as the pure essentials of watchmaking, elevated to the level of art. This is not your grandfather's Seiko. It's Grand Seiko. It's the ultimate in timekeeping, the ultimate in style, and the ultimate in collectability. Just tell them that Rick Stroud sent you, and you will get 1 year extra on the warranty on your purchase. That's Old Northeast Jewelers on 4th Street, as well as in Hyde Park. All right, Eduardo, we've just witnessed what feels like a turning point for this football team. I mean, they take down the number one offense in the NFC in the Green Bay Packers, and they do it convincingly. But first, after falling behind 10-0 in the first quarter, Green Bay had 20-3. And then all of a sudden, Jamel Dean jumps a route, you know, to Devontae Adams on the sideline, takes it back for a pick six. Next thing you know, the next series is another deflected ball that's intercepted. And sets them up at the 2-yard line. Ronald Jones runs well, and all of a sudden they reel off 38 unanswered points. I'm not really sure. I've been watching, of course, the Bucks play for a while. I've not seen a game turn that quickly. But the billing was Brady versus Rodgers. It turned out to be Rodgers getting decimated by the Bucks defense.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, this was a game that turned really quickly, and for a while it was pretty lopsided in the favor of the Packers for a good part of the first quarter. And really first half, and then, like you said, it changed really quickly. You know, this is a week-to-week. It's a drive-to-drive league sometimes when it comes down to it. And so we saw, you know, a couple big turnovers by the Bucks defense, and that's something that they've been doing recently is giving the Bucks, you know, some turnovers and some good field position. And just like that, you know, a 10-0 deficit turned into a 14-10 lead. And from then, you know, the Bucs defense just kind of put on the pressure. And like you said, they hit Aaron Rodgers a lot. They made him uncomfortable and, you know, had him on his back a lot. And from there on out, they really kind of dominated every aspect of this game. And it was a game that, you know, in a lot of ways, it was one they really needed. It was it's a signature win for them, one that not only, you know, a lot of the players on this team need because, you know, they haven't experienced winning at the NFL level, but also the Tom Brady needed, you know, in terms of him showing that, you know, they can win these kind of games against these kind of teams. You know, a couple of players that we talked to after the game, he said, listen, this is a big win for us because we know we're probably going to see the Packers down the road if we're going in the postseason. So to get a leg up on that and you know, benefit from the confidence that comes with that, this is a big week. And like you said, you know, 4-2 is a lot different than 3-3. But I think this one's a little bit more important just because of what kind of momentum and what kind of confidence it gives this team moving forward.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, 4-2 headed to, you know, the Raiders in Las Vegas on Sunday night for the next three games are prime time. Then they go to the New York Giants for a Monday night game and then home against the New Orleans Saints. The Saints were idle. They had their bye week. And so technically the Bucks now in first place by a half a game in the NFC South. And you're right. They may see the Packers again. I don't know who's going to win the NFC South. The Bucks were to win it. And somehow the Packers came up in the playoffs. This game might be what makes a difference in home field advantage, the head-to-head. So, of course, they don't have that with Chicago. But bouncing back from Chicago, a game that they felt like they gave away, 20-19 up there on a Thursday night, and the worst part of it was the penalties, right? They had like 11 for 106 yards, six on one drive, I think, and they really killed themselves had a chance to win that game many times over. Brady forgetting what down it was. I mean, they kind of went through an embarrassing 10 days or so. But to come out here, and they played, Eduardo, one of the cleanest games I think they've ever played in Bucs history. No penalties. There was a roughing the passer by Ndamukong Suh that was offset by an intentional grounding by Aaron Rodgers. But no penalties. They allowed no sacks, and they did not turn the ball over. They're going to be a hard team to beat if they can cut down the penalties. I thought it was impressive that the players said, basically Bruce Arians told them, look, if you're going to commit penalties, you can't play on this football team.
Right, and we know that. We know that, you know, there's two guys who are very important in this organization, Tom Brady and Bruce Arians, who, you know, just, you know, don't really put up with it. You know, you play good fundamental football, and that's that's the kind of the foundation of really good football. So, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we've heard this team talk so much over the years about beating themselves, you know, beating themselves, beating themselves, beating themselves. You know, Mike Evans talked about it, you know, earlier this week. It's just it's so tiring to talk about it over and over again and to do it over and over again. So to see them rebound from that Chicago game where it was a pretty low point for them, and the fact that, you know, it's just like anything else, when you have a bad game, a lot of guys want to get back out there. You know, they had a long week to think about it and to fix it, and that's what they did. They fixed it. I think it was Devin White. He said, you know, we really had to look in the mirror. You know, we had to be, okay, each person has to look in the mirror and say, okay, I'm going to be the guy who's not going to commit penalties. I'm going to be the guy who's not going to, you know, I don't want to be the guy who's going to put us back, you know, first and 15, first and 20, something like that. So, I think, you know, there's a lot of guys on this defense, especially on this defense. A lot of the penalties that were being committed were from veteran guys.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, a lot of the guys on this defense, all these younger guys, they've really kind of taken upon themselves to be like, hey, listen, we're not going to be those guys. We don't want to be an undisciplined football team. And we know that if we are an undisciplined football team, we're not going to go very far, no matter, you know, who wants to make us paper champions. So, you know, I think that in itself is a big step forward for this club because, you know, they need to show themselves that they could do it.
If they had lost this game, I think people would have still looked at them as a playoff contender, right? Because there's a couple extra wild cards, and 3-3 does not knock you out of anything. By beating the Green Bay Packers the way they did it, so resoundingly and completely after the 10-0 deficit, they're now an NFC championship contender. They're a team that could go to the Super Bowl, could find themselves against a team like this down the road late into the playoffs. So that sort of changes the focus of where they're at right now. Only 200. Look at these numbers. I can't believe it. The Packers had just 201 yards of total offense. And after the game, you know, Aaron Rodgers said that they didn't have a good week of practice. It was windy and cold up there in Green Bay. Here's how rare it was what they did. Aaron Rodgers has only his third pick six of his career. That's incredible to me. 6,200 attempts, and the guy only had three pick sixes in his career. That was the third one. And, you know, this defense now, I think they have, 11 interceptions on the season. Is that right? Or is it 8 interceptions, which is tied for second? I think the Colts have the most. And suddenly they're piling up stats. The other thing that stood out to me today was, you know, they weren't playing. They obviously don't have Vita Vea. Raheem Nunez Rocha stepped in there. They still shut down the run, contained it fairly well. But they got after the quarterback and the two linebackers, Devin White and Lavonte David. For those around the country who haven't seen these guys, they're going to be seeing them the next 3 or 4 weeks in a row here. They put on a show.
Yeah, you know, the Packers like to establish the run, right? They they've got two really good backs who not only run the ball well but can catch the ball, you know, on the outside. So they wanted to kind of stretch the field and maybe try to, you know, make, you know, Lavonte David and Devin White run a little bit. But it seemed that when they tried to do that, you know, it just brought out the best in those two guys, and they were breaking through gaps and they were making, you know, tackles for no gain or tackles for losses. And I think that really set the tone early after that first drive that the Packers went down the field and scored. But it's one of those situations where, again, this defense, like you mentioned, this defense is starting to put up numbers that compare it to a lot of the best defenses in the league. And it's interesting to say that because we know that this defense had grown into a good one, right? But they're, before our eyes, they're kind of becoming a great one, you know? And The big thing is the turnovers. You know, they're getting interceptions. You know, they're getting to the quarterback. The quarterback sacks against a Packers team that offensively did not make many mistakes going into this game. You know, Aaron Rodgers had not thrown an interception. You know, he had been sacked very few times. Yeah. It kind of is – we're talking about how much the Bucs kind of gained momentum. It kind of can go the reverse way too. It's like all of a sudden, you know, Aaron Rodgers throws a couple picks he hadn't thrown in any all year, and guys start looking around. They're like, hey, how's this going wrong for us? So, again, it goes back to those two interceptions that was so huge. But this defense as a whole, the sacks, getting to the quarterback, the interceptions, the run defense is still as stout, even without Vita Vea, amazingly. And, you know, the passing game, too, is they held the, like you said, to hold the, you know, the Green Bay Packers to, what, 201 total net yards. That's amazing. This was the number one top offenses in football. You know, they were averaging 440-some yards a game. So you basically allowed more than less than half of that. So just an amazing performance on this defense. And it's really they're really coming to their own.
Rodgers had just 160 yards passing. We mentioned the two interceptions, no touchdowns. A couple things that stood out on offense. Ronald Jones continues to give them an identity. One of the reasons why, you know, and Brady had pedestrian numbers himself. I mean, he was 17 of 27 for 166 with no interceptions. So he had the two touchdowns. So the rating is good, but he didn't have to do much. And that's because this team now is slowly finding an identity of running Ronald Jones, using play action. And I thought tonight, instead of, you know, they've been missing some running backs. I know that Shady McCoy came back and they threw him, I think, a pass or two. But they started to use Rob Gronkowski as that guy to set up things outside of the outside receivers. We saw a tight end screen. We saw him one time down the seam. He wound up really with one of his better days. He led them in receiving with 5 catches for 78 yards. And had a 31-yarder as well as a touchdown, his first, but was unable to spike it with his right hand because he's got a bad shoulder. So what do you make of you know, it's taken 6 weeks, but what do you see the identity of this football team? And I will say this, if the Bucs get a lead, whether it's Leonard Fournette who's still hurt or Ronald Jones that we've seen in his last couple of weeks, you're going to have a tough time getting the ball back because they can absolutely milk the clock for you.
Right, and the past few times you've seen Brady, you know, he's really been good at spreading the ball out, you know. And I think, you know, he's kind of feels his way around the receivers, and then he finds his guys. And today it was Gronkowski and Godwin. Yeah, you know, I really think this offense missed Chris Godwin. You miss those tough yards, and he's so solid in his route running that, you know, he just makes it easy for you as a quarterback. And again, we've been waiting, you know, almost for weeks to be like, when are Brady and Gronk going to get their groove back? You know, it's like when Stella got her groove back. You know, we're waiting. We're like, we knew it was going to happen. When's it going to happen? So today you saw that, you know, that that touchdown drive was like a little fade route, you know, the corner of the end zone. Gronk does some really nice footwork to stay in bounds and kind of spin a little bit around to, you know, catch the ball that's over his back shoulder. And then, you know, like you said, he had a 31-yard gain, so he showed that he can stretch the field vertically, which is something that we had not seen yet. So when you see that stat line, you know, 5 catches, 78 yards, a touchdown, 8 targets, you know, all those lines, all those numbers are really important because it means that Rob Gronkowski is becoming a important part of this offense for at least for 1 week. But moving forward, you needed for us to think that he was going to be a factor. We needed to see this first, right? And then going to your initial point is, you know, like we've got kind of a fantasy football tip to everyone here is that Ronald Jones is now an RB1.
Yeah, he is.
You know, so, you know, today he became an RB1 because 113 yards, 2 touchdowns. If you started Ronald Jones in fantasy football, you're pretty happy. But, you know, we talk so much about, hey, how you split these carries amongst these running backs. How, you know, is Ronald Jones going to be the guy? And over again, Bruce Arians has said he's going to be the guy. But, you know, he is the guy now. Three straight 100-yard games. Again, 2 touchdowns today. He's going to get in that end zone. You know, I think he's averaging about 5.5 yards a carry over the last 3 games, which, man, Rick, when we were talking about Ronald Jones even last year, and obviously the year before that, his rookie year, we weren't talking about this kind of guy, and now he's really putting up these numbers, and, you know, he is, if he can get a couple more catches out of the backfield, he's going to become a complete back. But the strong running, the vision, the patience that he has at the line, obviously he's getting some good run blocking. He's a guy who's going to have those two-yard carries, but he's going to break some big ones. He's going to move the chains, and he's going to come up with these kind of stat lines that even if you're just a fantasy football owner, you're going to like.
Yeah, I'll be the first to tell you, I was not a believer in Ronald Jones. He had to prove it to me, and he has three straight 100-yard games. That's only the fourth time in this club's history, I think, that has occurred. The last time it was Doug Martin, I think, as a rookie, did that. So that's how far back they go. So, yeah, he is definitely RB1. They still will get Leonard Fournette healthy at some point. McCoy can still be a factor in the running game as well. But there's no question that this is Ronald Jones. It's his position for sure.
And another thing, Rick, Bruce Arians told us, and whether we believed him or not this week, I have trust in Ronald Jones to give him 20 to 25 carries a game. Today, 23 carries, there's a career high. So, that goes to show. It's funny, on Twitter, anything that we tweet about the running backs or the running game, all the fantasy football players are like, Bruce is just throwing, it's all smoke and mirrors, blah, 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 blah. 23 carries, 113 yards, 2 touchdowns.
You know what's funny about Bruce Arians? Like, people always think that he's like not being they look for all BS. He doesn't mean it. What I have found is that Bruce Arians tells you exactly what he means. Like, you need to believe him every time he says something. Yes. Good or bad. That's just who he is. He doesn't mince words. It was obviously a huge win for them, 38-10. I'm wondering if the rest of the league now, because Monday morning there are all these shows and some of which I participate in, but it's Overreaction Monday. So what will be the overreaction today when you're listening to all these shows about Tom Brady and the Bucks, about the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers? How much have they put on notice the rest of the league, and has Tom Brady found a defense the way Peyton Manning did in Denver to help carry him to a Super Bowl, as opposed to maybe Brady having to do the heavy lifting?
Yeah, look at what he's got right now. He's got a defense that's getting takeaways, right, and putting him in really good field position, which is something even earlier in the year in that New Orleans game, they didn't have at all,
right.
And add running game, and add the fact that the Bucs had really good pass protection today, and he's got all the tools. Tom only threw for 166 yards today. He didn't need to throw for anything more than that, because they were able to score. And this is the big thing too that was different than last week, Rick, is the red zone. Every time that they've been within the 10-yard line, they pretty much punched it in, and they did that today. So, they had a couple setbacks last week in the red zone, but that's Brady, right? I mean, he's going to be efficient in the red zone. And again, when you get that running game, it opens up everything else. It opens up, the play action. It opens up, the long ball. So, it's funny because the passing game really wasn't that dynamic by any means. Mike Evans had one catch for 10 yards, Godwin had a good day. But other than that, he spread the ball out to a bunch of guys, but, he might have only gone to, those guys one or two times. But, it goes to show that he doesn't need to carry this team per se, that he's, when he's got some help and he just let you just let Tom Brady be Tom Brady, that that this team can go a long way. I mean, and having said that too, is like, I do think the Green Bay Packers aren't as bad as they were on the field today, and they probably will see them down the stretch. I think that's a good football team. They were coming off a bye, like you said. You never know a team coming off of the bye and the practice week, all the long rest, stuff like that. I think, looking forward, this is a team that, again, we always talk about the week by week kind of mentality, but, if they do lose this game, they're going in 3-3 into Vegas, all these night games, travel, a couple weeks, another a rematch with the Saints on primetime. They got the Rams, who's another playoff contender right now. The Panthers, another game with the Panthers, who, they're still kind of in the thick of the midst in the division. So now you're looking really good, 4-2. You've played probably, you've got that quote-unquote signature win under your belt against Green Bay, and now you can just kind of, let everything kind of, flourish from here and continue to grow and continue to kind of see where this thing takes you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, we'll certainly be talking about the Bucks all week long and to Bruce Arians later today. Something else happened over the weekend, and my girls were very excited about it, and I sat there and watched them agonize over this. But the Tampa Bay Rays are headed back to the World Series, and after being up 3-0 and then losing that lead, I thought for all the world that momentum was gone. But as they say in baseball, momentum is the next day's starter, and that happened to be Charlie freaking Morton. And I don't think in the history of baseball, in fact, I'm sure there's not a better Game 7 starter than Charlie Morton. How big was that? And Randy Arozarena, what are we watching with this guy who has already tied the record for rookies for home runs in the playoffs, is two hits away from Derek Jeter's record for hits? I've never seen anything like this in baseball, and he was the reason that they got off to a 2-0 start in that Game 7.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that home run was big. But like you mentioned, CFM is – I don't know why we ever doubted that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, blow a 3-0 lead, sure. But you have, when you have CFM on the mound, like you've got – you know, what he's able to do, and any of us who've covered him, we've covered him. You've talked to him a few times, Rick, and it's like – you know the kind of like chill mentality that this guy's got, that no moment is really too big for him. He just treats a Game 7 like it's, you know, a Wednesday start in Baltimore, to be honest. So yes. And the way that he does that is just that's what makes him such a big game pitcher. So in retrospect, every Rays fan was worried, right? But then when you saw this guy throw what 5 2/3 shutty and you know, basically, you know, we're thinking it's like, you know, you, if they get a lead, you know, Charlie's gonna hold that, and you know, that's what they did. They got a 3-0 lead with the Arozarena home run. Mike Zunino, who's come up pretty big with some big shots in the postseason, and you know, they were able to protect that lead. And you know, it's amazing, because this team, for a 60 game season, you know, when I've covered them, it's been they've gone through a lot of ups and downs, even through a 60-game season, right? Mm-hmm. And there's already a lot of ups and downs right now in any professional sports league with COVID and everything you've got to go through. But, you know, to think about this team and kind of the struggles they had early on, and then the strong stretch that they had, all the injuries to the pitching, guys who've had, you know, horrible, you know, career-altering injuries on this staff, and just all the stuff of going to the bubble with San Diego and to think that they're in the World Series now is pretty amazing. Even though they did have the best record in the American League, they are it is a great, great story when you think about everything that's going on. And obviously right now there's no better story than Arozarena and his cowboy boots, who I'd love to go to Texas because I need to pick up some cowboy boots. So, you know, maybe I'll make a trip down there and go. Would you wear cowboy boots?
I'm not a cowboy boot guy. I've been to Texas many times, and I've driven by those stores, and I'm not stopping in to get fitted. I know that a lot of people love them, and good for you, but I have no place to wear them, and frankly, they would hurt my feet. I'll say that, you know, Arozarena and Mark Tompkin wrote about this, and I know you guys have documented it in the past, but like the story he has, his dad dying, who worked a bunch of jobs, and then taking what amounted to a John boat, if you will, or a small craft across the Gulf of Mexico, from Cuba to Mexico, and then finding himself, you know, through baseball, is just incredible. And the Rays did it again. They went and they made a trade for a guy who started the year with COVID, quarantined. You know, we know the story: ate the chicken and the rice and did 500 push-ups a day and gained 15 pounds. And he didn't join the team until like late August, August 21st, I think. To think that he can come in here and carry them has been unreal. Now, they're going to need somebody to hit besides him, right? At some point, I don't think that the Rays are going to win the World Series unless the bats wake up a little more than they have. They've gotten a lot out of Zunino in the ninth spot. But beyond that, it just hasn't been consistent enough. So do you think that the defense and pitching will carry them to a title, or are they going to have to score more runs against the Dodgers or the Braves?
Yeah, so, I mean, the postseason always comes down to two things. Obviously, it's pitching and being able to scrape runs across. You know what I mean? So, you know, they're going to have to get some better hitting across the board. You know, it'll be interesting, you know, how's Kevin Kiermaier? You know, I mean, Brandon Lau had a home run late in one of those games, but he's really got – the best thing you can see is see Brandon Lau get a couple barrels, you know, early on in game one or game two, because they really need his bat too, you know. You know, Austin Meadows has had a couple big hits, but you know, you need more from him. So, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, they've gotten this far with, for the most part, Rick, an offense that kind of, you know, they hit a lot of home runs, but, you know, for the most part, they kind of, you know, just get by, you know, and they've done it on the pitching. You know, I think, you know, it's been remarkable the way they utilize the pitching throughout the championship series. You know, they went back to the opener a little bit. They did a lot of things, you know, with starters, with relievers, everything. So they're going to have to continue to be creative that way. You know, especially, you know, they're going to play a really good team, you know, no matter, you know, who it is, whether it's Atlanta or the Dodgers. So, but the one thing that this team does that I think is stayed and true, and they didn't have this all year long during the ups and downs, is they play really good defense. You know what I mean? And that's worth a couple runs in a big series like this. You know what I mean? That's going to be worth a few runs. And so as long as they continue to play that kind of fundamental, you know, defense and are still able to do that, you know, I think they've got a really good shot at this.
As we're doing this podcast, it's the top of the eighth. The Dodgers are leading the Braves 4-3, so that's why we don't know exactly who they're going to play. You'll know by the time you hear this. Both of those teams are good ball clubs, obviously. That's why this series has gone all the way to a game seven. Is there one or the other as we do this that, I mean, I think they played the Braves during the season. So is it an advantage or disadvantage if the Dodgers are the team they ultimately wind up playing and that they haven't seen them all year?
Yeah, I mean, you can say that. This is obviously an interesting year because, you know, even in the AL series, you know, they haven't seen a lot of these teams, you know, because of the schedule, because of COVID, you know, they only played the teams in the division and obviously the NL East teams counterparts or whatever. So, you know, they didn't really see the Astros this year. They know the Astros, but they didn't see them this year. You know, so there's something to that, but, you know, I've been asked that a couple times so far. It's like, who do you think that's a better matchup for them? And I don't know. I think both of these teams are really good teams. You know, the Braves went out and had a big lead on the Dodgers, and they came up gangbusters. I think that if the Dodgers pull this out, you know, they're going to have some good momentum going on their side too. And you know, they're kind of on a mission too. You know, I mean, they've been on this mission for a few years. So, you know, but at the same time, you know, there's a little bit of pressure that comes with that too, of you know, finishing the deal. And they've had a couple opportunities to finish the deal, and you know, and they haven't. So. You know, the Braves, I feel like they're kind of a different animal. You know, I don't even know if a lot of people, you know, they weren't necessarily even a consensus, you know, team to win their division. They're a really good team, but I don't know if anyone really expected them to be in this spot. So, but you know, like classic Braves teams, they've got a lot of good young pitching and good defense, and you know, they can make it hard for you. So. I think either one of these teams, it'll be a really interesting match, but I don't think there's one or the other that really kind of plays to the Rays' favor.
Yeah, I mean, the Braves are very athletic, and I mean, obviously the Dodgers are well known for their superstars and another huge payroll, and that's the thing that, you know, the Rays will be trying to overcome. I would say this. Here's the thing that would concern me about the Rays, and your boy, Snelly, was on the bumpy the other day and got some punchies. But he also walks and batters. He got very upset when Kevin Cash went out to get him, and it made sense why he was, but it didn't work out for Kevin Cash. And yet he also took Morton out, and I think people, I know my kids were screaming, why is they taking Charlie Morton out?
I was screaming too.
Yeah, and that, he got out of that inning, but the next inning he gave up a couple runs. So is this pitching staff, are these starters, whether it's Glasnow, Snell, or even Morton to some extent, can they consistently get deep, or are we going to see them continue to walk batters, get behind batters, and burn out and give you five and a third every week, every game? And is that going to do it against a better ball club like the Dodgers or the Braves?
Yeah, I mean, you'd love to see Blake Snell go out there and give you six plus, you know what I mean? Six solid plus, and really not have to worry. The big thing is the pitch count, right? It's like, that's when you worry. And I don't think Blake's pitch count was that high the other day. And you know, Blake, in most games, Blake's going to be talking to himself coming off the mound from watching Blake pitch. Like, he's just a guy who just has that look where he's just kind of never really satisfied with stuff when he's walking off the mound. But, you know, this is it's interesting because, I think that's a really good question, because these guys have been going, you know, 4 2/3, you know, five. And, you know, there's always either the first or second inning where, you know, they have this, you know, 20-some pitch inning. And, you know, that will catch up to you. But the weird thing is, like, I felt like that was going to catch up to them already, you know, but it really kind of hasn't, you know. And that goes to the maneuvering of that bullpen and everything like that. Their bullpen's been pretty much lights out, though, you know, I mean, for the most part. And, you know, it's guys like Nick Anderson, it's guys like Diego Castillo, like guys like that who they're starting to extend a little bit more. You know, when you talk about the Morton outing, you know, I going to Nick Anderson and asking him for, I think 7 or 8 outs at that point, yeah. You know, that's a lot for a guy like that, you know. I don't know how much more you can extend this bullpen. So, yeah, I think you do need a little bit more, no more length from these starters. And again, it's the innings, but it's also just the laboring of at bats. You know what I mean? And they've really, there's been some times when they've kind of struggled with that. But again, they've gotten through it somehow.
They're in the World Series and they have a chance to be world champions. That's all that matters. And for the World Series, the thing that would be different than the ALCS or the previous rounds is that there are days off. And you're going to be able to come back with some of the starting pitchers, and so maybe you won't burn through your bullpen as much. Maybe you can go a little longer, you know, with some of your starters as well. So we'll see how that goes. Well, it's been quite a couple weeks, I would say, for Tampa Bay, which is the hub right now of the sports world. The Lightning winning the Stanley Cup, the Rays in the World Series, and Tom Brady taking down Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers here. What a weekend for Tampa Bay sports. And, of course, we talk about it here all the time on Sports Day Tampa Bay. And, friends, remember, and then Steve Burstyn, my producer, reminds me that the Rowdies are in the Eastern Conference Championship as well.
You can't forget about the Rowdies.
The Rowdies are a kick in the grass. So we've got all that to talk about this week. We hope you join us. We're here every Monday through Friday. Go see our friends, too, at Old Northeast Jewelers on 4th Street. They've been in St. Pete forever. They now have a brand-new store in Hyde Park. Check out their Grand Seiko. It's the ultimate in timekeeping, the ultimate in style, and the ultimate in collectability. You go there and say that Eduardo Encina sent you, or Rick Stroud, and they'll give you 1 extra year warranty on your purchase. That's Old Northeast Jewelers in St. Pete and Hyde Park. For Steve Burstyn, I'm Rick Stroud at the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.